Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and today the interview is going to be with Heather Hillstrom. Heather wrote, directed, produced, edited one of the best short films I've seen on the festival circuit, and that's The King in the Ring. I could try to tell you exactly why The King in the Ring is such a brilliant film, but instead you should just watch it. So go to discoverindiefilm.com, go to the posting that is for this podcast. Right there, the film is embedded. Watch it, and then you can listen to this interview with Heather and find out everything she had to go through to make such a fantastic short film. All right, let's go.
Yeah, we're kind of all done.
You're all done.
We did, because this last year we did festivals and, you know, it's been online for a little bit. Right now I'm trying to look into like specialty screenings, like specialized groups, maybe religious groups, maybe screen it with like boxing fans, you know, trying to figure out more ways to get it seen. But as far as like that initial push of promotion, it's like we're kind
okay,
of
cool.
It's out there for everybody can enjoy it.
That's super.
Yeah,
well then let me ask my question, which is about your filmmaking history. What started you on the path?
I think it's my mom. My mom gets credit for it. I always really liked movies. My dad was really into them, and I remember watching like, I don't even remember first seeing like Star Wars and stuff like that. I just remember that I had seen it when I was really little. Forever.
Is that like a VHS kind of thing or?
Yeah. I remember we had tons, cause I think my dad used to tape stuff off of TV. So I remember we had tons of VHS with my dad's little block lettering of like all these, like, cause we had Star Wars, but we had like the Ewok Adventure, and we had like, and that's how we had like Indiana Jones and stuff like that, is that he taped it off of TV at some point, and we just had dozens of these VHS with my dad's little block lettering on them. I've studied drama in high school, and so for a while I was thinking about acting, and I would be watching a movie or something with my mom, and I would, not even thinking about it, point something out about the movie. Like, oh, they used a shaky camera in the crazy guy's apartment, but the camera's still everywhere else, before I knew words like handheld and on sticks. And I would point stuff out, or they put him in front of a blue background because it brings out his eyes. And my mom would say, Heather, you should be a director. And at first I was like, I don't know about that. But the more I thought about it, the more it made a lot of sense. I've always liked storytelling, and I've always had a thing, you know, for visual arts. And the more I thought about it, the more it made sense. And so by my senior year of high school, that's what I had decided I wanted to do.
And so you're doing drama and plays in high school.
Yeah, like
maybe middle school too. But then by senior year, you thought about...
Yeah, senior year was when I was like, because I was doing drama through high school, and then, but by my senior year, I was like, I want to be behind the camera. And I made my very first short film. It was about Helen of Troy, and we shot it at the duck pond near my house, and we borrowed Roman soldier costumes from the church passion play and shot this like 3-minute thing.
And were you in L.A. or were you...
Yeah. I've been in Los Angeles since I was 4 and a half. So we lived in Simi Valley, which is about 25 minutes from Los Angeles proper. Yeah. And had grown up out here. So it's kind of like, I've always kind of regretted that I don't have like a cool moving out here story. I have so many friends from the Midwest and back East, and like talk about packing everything into their car and all that stuff. And I'm just like, yeah, I went to college 20 minutes from my house and, you know,
but I think it's cool to be from here, and I'm biased because I'm third generation LA. So,
well, I mean, and I knew where everything was. I mean, you know, my, so I studied film school at Cal State Northridge, and my senior project was a Western, and I, my, the house where I grew up is down the street from where they shot Little House on the Prairie. Mm-hmm. So that's where we shot this Western. So it's like, I knew where that stuff was already.
So you, did you do undergrad film at CSUN?
Yeah. Yes. Got a, just a BA in film production and screenwriting. And it was a great school. I had really encouraging professors. And it's, you know, I was a little anxious about going to a school so close to home, but everybody throws around like UCLA and USC, but at the time, like their program, you couldn't even touch a camera until your junior year.
Yeah.
And at Cal State Northridge, it was like, as soon as you got through like the initial, you know, however fast you got through those initial requirements, you could be making a movie. And so I was making one my fall of my sophomore year.
And the inspiration senior year to start directing, like, so you got your act together that quickly to
I know.
Or did you go to CSUN and then like declare film?
I went in knowing. I was very lucky.
That was quick.
Yeah, I was. I remember thinking that my freshman year that I met a lot of other students who really weren't sure what they wanted to do yet. And just like my mom said it, and I started thinking about it, and I was making this project, and it felt like, because I had gone through other careers before actor, before that I was like into science, chemistry, and genealogy, and at one point I wanted to be a snow cone maker very badly.
Like, might have been a little young for that.
So I'd gone through all this other stuff, but when I started thinking about that, it really felt like, I remember it felt like when I was like four cells, this is what I was supposed to be. It just fit so perfectly. You know, it just fit. It just felt right. And so I stuck with it. And yeah, going into school, I was one of those rare kids that like, I knew what I wanted to do, and that's what I stayed with.
Yeah. And I've heard lots of good things about the CSUN program. I really have.
I mean, one of the things that really did it for me was that, you know, I had heard stories coming out of these other schools about how they're going to tell you it's really competitive and you really should probably pick something else because it's so hard and all that stuff. And my very first meeting with my counselor, we're talking about classes and like within the first 2 minutes of the 2 or 5 minutes of the meeting, he was saying, well, let's get your classes sorted out so we can get you out there making great movies. Like there was no question about it. It was just like, yeah, you too.
Yeah,
you know?
There's no pomp. There's no,
yeah,
no airs put upon.
And I think it helps too because it at the time at least was a big commuter school, and people like the school regularly got glowing reviews back, like from their interns, because at USC, like the nickname is University of Spoiled Children, at USC and like UCLA, I should say for Cal State Northridge, you had students there who were like, they would go to class and then they would go to a job. Like they were used to working hard. And I think that people forget that to be a filmmaker, to make movies, it's hard work. It's fun, but it's hard work.
And your first jobs out of school are hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't come out a director unless you have a really good trust fund.
Yeah. No matter how much I believed I should have come out a director.
Well, you did come out a director, but you didn't come out with somebody with budgets.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But it's incredible. Like I still had friends that I would talk when I was a PA. I had friends that I would talk to about the job, and they'd be like, "You're on set 14 hours a day. That's insane." I'm like, "That's normal. That's completely normal."
Yeah, that's reasonable.
Yeah.
When it goes over 14, you start to wonder.
Yeah, when you're there until 4 in the morning, or when you're driving home when the sun is coming up. My friend calls those Fratterdays. Yeah. I like that term.
Or when you don't have enough time to get in like 6-7 hours of sleep when they want you back.
Yes. Yeah, I did a job like that. We were shooting in Monrovia. And so, like, I had to, like, you know, and I was a PA, so it was first on, last out. And, yeah, we would wrap and I'd go home. and barely have time to take a shower before I passed out and then have to get up and drive back. It was nuts.
Well, before we get into that phase of your life, though, so while in school, any films you're particularly proud of that you made there? Did you make a bunch of shorts? Did you?
I don't know if I'm proud of them. let's see. I made one fall of sophomore year. I know I must have made some other, and some of it was just like, it was like a cinematography project. Like it didn't have to be a film, but like we had, it didn't have to be a film, but like we had, a project where, you know, we had to show different kinds of lighting. So we just do like kind of a tracking shot through something, with different kinds of lighting. I did that kind of stuff. My very first project there, I used to really want to be able to get my hands on it. Now that I think about it, I'm really glad I can't see it again. But it was a learning experience both for directing and also for working with other people. You know, that's part of why, you know, you need to do it is you have, that's a skill as much as the filmmaking part is learning how to work in a group and, you know, pick your battles and compromise and make a case for things.
And see how to inspire people and get them to take what they're doing and do the best they can.
So that was, I think, my first project. I would say I did two or three before my senior project. Mm-hmm. And I also did stuff outside of school too, just get some friends together at somebody's apartment and put something together. Did a couple of film projects there. And then my senior project, I'm still pretty proud of. It was a Western, like I said. And looking back on it, like if I had to like give one of those blurbs on the back of the DVD, I'd say it's a good start. That's what I'd call it. It's a good start.
Well, you're probably a little humble, but yeah. Sure.
It was ambitious. It was, they always say don't work with kids and animals, and we had kids, and we had horses and cows.
Horses, Jesus.
Yeah. And it was, when we were shooting, we were up in the hills surrounding Simi Valley, and that was the fall that this big fire like went through that area. So not only did, and Cal State Northridge, I think has improved their, equipment since then, but we were shooting on like a 40-year-old film camera that the first weekend just broke.
Like Super 16 or a,
it was a 16. Yeah.
16.
And, it was an Eclair ACL, which a lot of people don't even like know what that is.
I remember the brand.
Yeah. It was so old. Our first shoot day, like I had planned it down to the minute, these two weekends, and the very first shoot day, the camera broke and the school was closed. We just had to like call that whole weekend off.
Wow.
And spent the next few months trying to make up those days because our actors had got the time off from their table waiting gigs or whatever to come and do this.
So did you cast from the community? I'm just curious. Did you cast from the community at large or from CSUN students?
I think I was too cheap to place an ad anywhere. So I think that what I ended up doing was, put ads up, like posted advertisements around the campus.
Right, like Lost Dog things, but you need an actor.
Yeah, we're casting this project.
I'm sure there's no shortage of actors in a, a big school too.
And we got a lot. We must have been casting from outside too. I just don't remember. But we got a lot. We got a lot of people who came out to read. We got a lot of people who came out to read. So you know, it wasn't like we had to go with who we could get. We were able to choose some good actors. One of them was a friend of mine. One of them was somebody that I knew that I asked him to read for it. And we had a good.
So you got that done, and then you graduated.
Graduated and then finished the project, unfortunately.
Like post or shooting more because of that?
Post
last
took,
day.
No, we managed to get everything shot. It was in the fall semester of my senior year was when we started shooting, and then we managed to get everything shot by the end of the semester. But yeah, Post carried on forever. They were like transferring over from, like, because that first project that I did, I was on a flatbed.
I was going to say, were you editing on a flatbed, the old-fashioned,
the very first one I did
film?
But by the time I got to senior project, they were just transferring over to non-linear editing systems. So they had an Avid, but they didn't have anybody there who knew how to use it. So they had somebody who came in, and you had to sign up for time with her, and so you had to compete with all these other projects. Post was a nightmare on that one. Post was awful. So I didn't finish it until after I graduated. But finished it, submitted it to festivals. We got into four. Like I said, I mean, you graduate film school, like, thinking, well, this is it. I made this great movie. I'm going to get discovered, and it's going to be a cakewalk from here on out. And that's not what happened. But from working on that project, so the woman who owned the location, who owned the land where we were shooting, she introduced me to some location managers, and that was how I got my first PA gig. I was working locations on a pilot for a show called Invasion. I don't know if anybody remembers it, but it had William Fichtner in it, and it had... who else? It had Eddie Cibrian, and it had, but it was only on for one season, and I worked on the pilot as a PA, and all of these initial situations, like I said, so like the Western, my senior project, literally a baptism by fire because I had to go through all that nonsense. And then this first pilot that I worked on, the pilot takes place during a hurricane. So it was like I was PAing, like soaking wet. And like we were there, like I said, at 4 a.m. And, but that's how I got into working as a production assistant, is from the people that I met on that project. Then I was basically for a while, the PA that they called when they needed an extra person, like a day player. I was, you know, if I wasn't on any shows or anything, but if they had an unusual number of extras or if somebody was sick or something like that, then they'd call me to come in. So I worked on CSI Miami. I worked on My Name is Earl.
So the line producers, or you were on the list of people to call.
For not so much line producers as key PAs, a couple of second ADs had my number.
That's pretty cool to be involved in productions of that scale.
It was great because CSI Miami, you know, I got to see them blow stuff up. I got to see fights, which is like, you know,
that's foreshadowing a little bit.
My Name is Earl. I got to, My Name is Earl, you know, we got to work in some really cool, like preset stages. That was kind of a cool thing.
I was a really big fan of that show.
Oh, it's great.
Really,
and
it.
Everybody who worked on it was really like, it was a very happy set.
By the way, so during this period, it sounds like, you know, it was a few years.
A few years, yeah.
But were you writing when you were home?
Yeah, I was also doing small short projects. Some of them, you know, were just, I made one that cost $0. It was me and my friend and some Legos. And it wasn't even stop motion. Like, we weren't even that ambitious. We just, like, would pose the Legos and write something funny for them to say and, like, do voiceover. But then I also did a couple of projects, you know, that, you know, required camera rentals, and, you know, we had to feed people and we had to get props and stuff like that. And I was just doing like little things every once in a while. And it's so great that I did that, because you really, to get good at this, you just have to practice, and it's hard. That's why it's hard, because to practice, it's expensive, and to practice, it's you know, demanding. But I all the things, whenever I make a good decision now, all the things that I know because I screwed it up on one of these other ones. That's the only reason that I learned it is because I did it and was like, oh, shouldn't have done it that way. And now I know. So it's like really, I'm really grateful and it's really important to have had that practice. I was PAing for a while. When I was out of work, I would volunteer on other people's projects. Mm-hmm. And that was great because that's when you get to try stuff that you're not technically qualified for. Like they were like, hey, we need an AD. I've never AD'd before. Yeah, but you've seen people do it and we don't have any money. Do you want to do it? Okay, I'll give it a shot.
And was this friends from school or people you met PAing or
people I met through working. Yeah. Some of it was friends from school. I think that's how it started.
Network was building of
definitely
creative people.
That's been great too, is I still like, yeah, you meet people through working on other projects, through working on like at your, as a PA on legitimate projects. Through that network, got asked to do things, had people to ask to do things, and we all kind of, and that passed the time when, in between jobs, when I was out of work.
But you were living at home, so it was low stakes, right? That's a wonderful time of life when you're young and the stakes are low and you can just keep trying and gambling and having fun, and it's not like you don't have the pressures of, I've got all the pressures in life aren't there yet. That's why it's so great to do what you did.
It was really, yeah, because after school, so I lived at school, but after school, after I graduated, I did move back home, and that was really great to be able, because PAing, I mean, at the time it seemed like a fortune, but PAing, day playing a couple days a week does not pay rent. But it was great that I was able to, it was great that I was able to live at my mom's and be able to do all these things. And eventually I moved out, but then I think somebody early on in my career advised me, you know, live beneath your means whenever you can. And I always tried to do that. Like when I did move out, I moved into a studio and, ultimately I moved in with my boyfriend into another studio. So that was,
oh, that's great. When you're young and you're sharing a studio, it's great.
I tried to live to make that work. When I did move out of my mom's, get my own place, I did have more of a steady gig working at a behind-the-scenes DVD production company. Actually, the same company as previous podcast guests, Jeremy Foley and Sarah O'Reilly. That's how I met them.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, they worked there when I came to work there.
I didn't know you guys were friends.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. We worked together at that company, and that was terrific because I learned. So Jeremy actually gave me a really great opportunity because he had this really long trip. He was going to be gone for like 3 weeks, and he was an entertainment marketing producer, and he asked me to step in for him while he was gone, and I'd never done that before, but I slid into it pretty easily, I think. And, and then after he came back, I was able to do more of that stuff because I'd done it because he'd asked me. So I'm very grateful to him for that because I learned a whole other set of skills. That was like a much different environment because you aren't on set, you're in an office and you're working. It's mostly post-production. Like we did have camera crews and shoots, and that was great because the producer I worked for initially there, like I got to help set up those shoots. And sometimes I got to write for some of those, which was also great. It just gave me more experience. It gave me more, that I had on my resume more evidence of,
and you saw more aspects of the industry. You saw more, you saw different sides of filmmaking.
Yeah, absolutely. Cause entertainment marketing is something that you don't think about, but it's like somebody has to cut the trailers. And if you're good at it, that's, you know, there's people, that's their whole job, is they produce and edit those trailers and, you know, and they're good at it. And like, you know, that's their career. That's what they do. And, you know, so yeah, so, so that was a really, great experience, that I got to try a lot of stuff. But again, while I was there, I still was doing outside stuff. While I was there, I did my first music video. Mm-hmm. Somebody, a friend of my mom's, had a band, and out of the blue was like, by any chance, would you want to direct a music video for us? And I had just been talking with, my then boyfriend, about kind of feeling frustrated. And he was like, well, you need to get directing again. And then this happened to come down the pipeline.
So you hadn't been behind the camera.
It had been a little bit. Yeah. Cause I had started the job, and the job was, again, even though it was an office job, it was a 10-hour day. We were there at 9:30 and we went home at 7:30. And doesn't leave a whole lot of room, you know, for doing your own projects. So it had been a little bit, and, you know, he recognized that might have been, you know, what was making me frustrated. So yeah, so I got in there and I directed, my first music video, and I'm still very proud of it. It turned out really, really cool. And that was something that I produced and directed all by myself. I got a friend to edit it.
And they gave you free rein creatively to do your side, or did they have something in mind?
I pitched some ideas to them, and I think I tried to make it like all official. Like I typed up a treatment and sent it off to them. But I think it was the kind of thing where they were pretty relaxed about, you know,
they're just stoked that someone talented was going to make them a music video. Probably.
I think they were, yeah, just excited about a music video. Plus, you know, I think that when you are, directing music videos, because now I've done two, and I think when you're directing music videos, it's important to, you know, get to know, if you don't know them already, get to know the band and get to, you know, see their shows and talk with them. And then you can tailor your ideas. You want to play to their strengths. Basically, it's a commercial for the band. You want to make them look whatever their brand is, cool or sexy or quirky or whatever. And so, you know, I think it helps get your ideas, approved if you pitch something that is their personality anyway, you know? And that's what I've tried to do when I've worked on those.
Because that's the formula. Richard Lester did that with the Beatles. I mean,
yeah.
That's the formula, right? Is adjust your vision to the client.
Yeah. And I think I've done a pretty good job of doing that. Cause if you look at my other music video, it's very different in tone and idea and all that stuff. So that was a really fun experience.
And were you writing screenplays? Were you writing?
I feel like I've been writing always.
Always.
Always writing. Wrote, you know, actually was writing in high school, around maybe even a little before the time that, my mom suggested, filmmaking, wrote all through college. I feel like I've just always been writing, and for better or worse, because I think, with writing, it's important to, like, I think I have friends that are writers and I think are more successful in the writing route, like winning contests and stuff like that and getting fellowships and things like that. And I don't necessarily think it's because I'm not as good a writer. I think it's because they put themselves out there more. And that's something that I wish that I'd done, is that I'd been more confident in my writing and I've been in writers groups. I think at this time I was in a writers group, Which is insanely helpful. But also, yeah, like submitting to, submitting your work to workshops and contests and stuff like that. You know, it's, you know, being confident enough in your work.
Yeah, it's part of the process too.
So yeah, so I have been working.
How many shorts? How many shorts in between, like the senior project
and now
and King in the Rain?
I've lost track. I want to say it's somewhere around 10.
Cool.
Because sometimes I would just shoot something like when I was visiting my cousins,
but
and I count that.
This makes you a productive.
Yeah.
Active filmmaker.
Yeah, it's,
you know,
very...
You're not a filmmaker sat around, you know, saying, you know, this thing I just wrote.
Yeah.
Somebody should make it for me. Like, somebody mm-hmm. should put everything together.
Yeah.
Like, so you've been really active.
It's the kind of thing I've always thought of myself as, like, you know, I do things before I think about whether or not I can do them. I just throw myself into it, and somewhere in the middle, I'm like, oh, maybe this was a mistake, but it's too late now. you know, I think it helped that senior project was so ambitious because it didn't occur to me to figure out whether or not I could do it. I was just like, this is the vision I had in my head. I'm going to figure out how to make this happen. And then, in a lot of ways, a lot of the projects since then have been significantly easier. It's been nice to look, you know, I'm recently recutting my reel, and every time I update my resume, it's really nice to see all of those lines of things that it's like, you know, yeah, I've earned this experience. But also, I mean, like I said earlier, everything that I've done is teaching me, and it's, like, the projects that I have, the caliber of the projects now wouldn't be there without all that stuff.
Without the and I also assume making 10-ish films in on your own mm-hmm. out in the real world is also let you go through a lot of collaborations and finding more and more people you like working with.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
So by now, do you have like the killer crew that you have your A-team?
Yeah, I've got a lot of people that are my go-to people that I call first, which is really cool. It's really exciting.
That is cool.
Yeah.
And of the 10, I mean, I'm biased, not biased, but I've only seen King of the Ring.
Right, right.
And I think it's just superb.
Thank you.
As you know from our Q&A at
yes.
the festival, it's like, you know, it's just such a great film.
Thank you.
And do you see a line of getting your vision closer to your vision every time?
Absolutely.
Is it the best thing you've ever done, I guess is the question?
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. It's the King of the Ring is... the first movie, and of course at this point I've seen it dozens of times, and with all the other projects, with most projects you watch it and it's like, oh, I would have done that a little bit differently, I still wish I'd fixed that. And I watch The King and the Ring and I don't have that feeling.
It's so good. Every moment
so
in it is so good.
I'm extremely proud of it. I'm really happy with how it turned out, and that feels really good. It's a definitely, you know, I know I'm repeating myself at this point, but I feel like all those projects up to this that I wasn't 100% happy with, that didn't quite look the way they wanted, the way that didn't match my vision, I feel like The King and the Ring is the reward for all that hard work.
And did you learn as a writer along the way too? Did you evolve as a writer or?
Yes. I still don't prefer short projects as writing. I write, I have a lot of different feature projects. I have, one pilot, for a series, that I'm working on. And I am much more comfortable with the structure of a feature length script, much more comfortable. Shorts are almost their own animal when you're writing them, because you know, if you're going to do something in 11 minutes, it's not going to be the same, like, like first act, second act, third act, you know, proportions are different.
you tell a complete story. Yeah, some shorts are a life moment or
like a setup and payoff. Brief, yeah. A lot of them are like there's two beats. There's setup and payoff. Yeah.
Whereas you take us through a little journey. Although it's a little longer, right? Isn't it like, or is it 11?
It's 11 minutes.
It's 11 minutes.
10:45.
You get all that done in 11 minutes?
It's that was something that wasn't so much writing as editing, I think, because I think I might have talked about this at the festival initially. The interview with Rob that is now, simultaneous action with the fight. Initially, the interview with Rob was like a self-contained scene that happened before that fight at this climactic fight. And it slowed everything down to have that all in one moment. I edited it out of necessity because that is something, I had a great editor and she moved. So I don't have an editor that is both affordable and timely right now. So I edited this project and, but then I gave it to people. I sent it to that person that had moved and asked for her opinion. I sent it to another filmmaker friend of mine. I sent it to a friend who is a co-producer on television. So she looks at cuts all the time. She's like, that's my job. And asked for their feedback. I sent it to the DP because he is also a writer. And so, asked for their feedback. And that helped me make those decisions that I think that without a doubt was better for the movie. So that was something to learn about that I learned about editing because it was also a tricky thing because at that point I wasn't sure. I was pretty sure we couldn't afford to reshoot anything. It was like, not only do I have to recut this to make it work, I have to recut it without adding anything. I have to recut it with exactly...
Yeah, because you were dealing with a location and a large group of people.
And the project being what it was, it was locations, it was actors, it was costumes, it was, you know, recreating everything.
It's funny, it's a term we only apply to sci-fi a lot of the time, world building.
Yeah.
You did world building.
That was what was so exciting and daunting about this project, is that because I wanted to film it in a documentary style, like one of the jobs that I worked on when I was a production assistant, I worked in the art department. So I was familiar with set decoration and all that stuff. And so I knew that it's like, normally you can be like, okay, we're going to be in just this room or we're going to be facing just this way. So we only have to make that part look good. But in this one, we were seeing the whole world. We had no idea where our cameras were going to be. So wherever we were, all of it had to match and all of it had to look real, not just movie real, but real. That was what was most nerve-wracking to me in the production process, was whether or not we could pull it off that it would be real. And so many people...
That was the only thing that... on a technical side, because what I haven't asked you is about the writing, like the germination of the idea, mm-hmm. and the fact that it's a really courageous... story. You may have just written it. I'm being presumptuous, but you may have just written it and thought, oh, this is cool. But it's pretty daring. If I would assume that if you showed it to, Hollywood types, they'd be like, oh, this is too hot. Like this is controversial. Even though it's really not, but I'm sure the first impression would be that.
I mean, I was disappointed because we didn't. I submitted it to Academy qualifying festivals, and we got into one. And I submitted to all of them. And I'm wondering if that had something to do with it, that maybe the topic, whatever. The idea came about through my life. I haven't been talking about it because I've been talking about work, but there have been some setbacks, disappointments, tragedies, that made me frustrated, with, made me frustrated with fate, with God, with whoever is in charge of us.
And I picked up that you have a bit of a religious background because your first film as a kid, you borrowed the costumes from church. So you had an upbringing with religion in it.
Yeah, my family's Catholic, and for a while we were twice a year Catholics. We weren't we weren't great churchgoers.
That's still Catholic.
Still counts. And then I kind of got back into it in high school and college. I was part of a Catholic Newman Club in college for a little while. But then I struggled with that because of kind of the stuff that I ran, the tragedies and stuff that I ran into. And so I actually had been thinking about this idea of physically expressing being angry with God for a while. And I wish I could, I don't even remember exactly what moment crystallized it. But I know it was after my sister passed away. She'll be, it's 5 years. 5 years ago, she passed away. And after that was when I started to, think about this idea again and think about it. And I don't even remember what made me think about this, but as a documentary, I think part of it was that shooting it as a documentary versus shooting it as a narrative. I feel like the idea was so, such a huge metaphor that I think making it a documentary makes it easier to access.
It's more grounded in a
way. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. If the same thing had been done narrative,
it might have just come off as just way too artsy, you know?
Yeah. And or even artificial. Like how do you sell this? And were you familiar with the underground boxing world? Because there is an underground boxing
I was not familiar with it. I just started researching it, you know, when I was writing the project and learning that, there are like these underground boxing clubs and rings and all that stuff all over the country, all over the world. People do them in their backyards. People do them in gyms when they're closed. And
But doing a documentary makes it look like you're revealing something that's there.
Yeah.
Not making up a story.
Yeah. Yeah, that was very exciting to me because, you know, that was around the time that I decided when I was writing it, like I wrote a script, but I don't think I actually gave it to the actors. I think the actors, I typed up background for them and then I actually interviewed them on these questions and to kind of keep it. Make it feel
like documentary interview.
Yeah. Documentary interviews. So when we were casting, it was kind of the same thing is that we were, for most of them, we gave them, we did film the audition. So we had that. When we were casting, I think we gave them kind of background, or I might've written up kind of a monologue, but like said, you know, you didn't have to stick to it. It was kind of, you know, I kind of described for the auditioners.
But you gave them freedom to improv and
Definitely. Which was great, which, you know, for the audition process resulted in some odd submissions, but, but it was great for what the actors we ultimately cast and when we were shooting, because they really, everybody really, really got into their parts and really took it very seriously, and contributed their own details and stuff that just made it richer. And these were all people that just showed up to the casting. I worked with, Jane Bacon, now Jane Flowers, who is coming up in the casting world herself. And, she works on SEAL Team now. And she was, I had never worked with a casting director before this process. But she, you know, walked me through it. And it was, again, that was also great because it was also a collaborative it wasn't just that the casting director just does what they tell you tell them to do. It was that she gave feedback and, like, you know, offered her thoughts and, you know, really provided a lot of insight that I hadn't thought about. She was invaluable. And so a casting director is another person that it's like, if you can find somebody that you have a great working relationship with,
that's often a big difference at the festival level between projects is who had a casting director and who struggled on their own. I think it often shows.
I think you can, because I've worked on projects before. As I said, this was the first time I had a casting director, but I have worked on projects before where we at least called in a lot of people. I think it's less about, because I got nervous a little bit because the stigma of non-union performers is that they're not as good as union, which doesn't really make any sense because every union performer was non-union first. I think it's not so much what I've learned from this and from a recent project that was also non-union is not that you shouldn't use non-union actors. It's that you shouldn't settle. It's just look until you find what you're looking for, because it's out there. And you just have to give yourself the time and the options, you know, call a lot of people in. It's like, they say a secret to taking a great photo is to take a bunch of photos.
It's true.
We think
that these people, you know, you look at a modeling shoot.
Yeah.
And you don't see the 917 crappy pictures.
Yeah.
You see the one they chose for the ad.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I think that with casting, it's the same way. It's like if you give yourself a lot of options, you're going to find what you're looking for.
Especially the way you did. So you were watching tape of all these people.
We held a casting session, actually, at CAST, which I just found out doesn't exist anymore. But CAST in Hollywood, they had, you know, these rooms and they gave you an iPad and we had, like, Jane and I were set up for 2 days, just at this little table with our iPad, and they would, you know, come in one at a time, and
you went home and you watched video of all the auditions.
We actually did it all in that one weekend. We called people Saturday through Sunday morning, and then like Sunday afternoon were callbacks, which initially made me nervous, but Jane made it so easy. So we started out Saturday morning and by Sunday evening it was cast.
Like I said at the festival, like, you know, you start off just your script is superb.
Thank you.
Because just the way it starts off and you think, oh my God, I'm just watching a fun little blasphemy movie.
Yes. Yes.
And then it transitions into something interesting. And then at the end, you know, you kind of even surprise us with like the big emotional wallop.
That's been so fun to see the audience reaction to this thing, because when it starts, there's a lot of laughter. Like if I'm watching it in a theater, when it starts, there's a lot of laughter. And when I'm watching it with people who've never seen it with an audience before, they turn to me and they're like, oh no, they're laughing. And I'm like, it's okay. It's okay. Just wait.
You're supposed to laugh. Yeah.
You know, because they're thinking about me and they're like, are people not taking my friend seriously? So it starts out with a lot of laughter and then you get about to that climactic point around the middle and it's like you can hear a pin drop in the theater. Yeah. It gets so quiet.
Yeah, it's when the dad starts sharing his story.
Yeah.
And you start to, God, that would be, it was so interesting to like know like what people realize when.
Yeah. It's really fun to watch. And then people come up to me after and they're crying. One person came up and said, he called it a gut punch, kind of what you were talking about.
But it feels good. You give people an emotional release.
It's really it's been so much more rewarding than I even pictured, because like you're saying, it's like this fun blasphemy movie. I predicted that people would get very upset about it. And what I've learned, because I've had people come up to me and say, well, I consider myself very strong in my faith. And I got to tell you, halfway through, I was ready to really hate this movie. But then they get to the end and they're like, I actually think this is something Jesus would do. If it helped people, this makes sense to me that he would do this.
Yeah.
And I love that, because for me, it was, you know, because for me, for the reasons that I wrote it, it was so much that like, you know, that catharsis was about needing to...
Needed a catharsis
to be able to confront somebody about this heartbreak. And it's really cool to have people tell me that they believe in it and they believe in this idea. And it's not just me just being angry.
Well, also, I think listening to this interview, I now know enough that the reason it's so brilliant, the reason it's so great, is because it's sincere.
Yeah.
That you were, first of all, you know, raised religiously, so you have respect for that. Mm-hmm. Because if the same idea was done by someone who is just sort of being manipulative, or someone who was like, oh, I know some people believe that this figure represents the creator. Mm-hmm. And you know what I mean? Like it comes from a real place.
Yeah.
And you were going through real sadness.
And I've thought about that a lot, because like, I think that I've never been, because sometimes filmmakers, especially first time filmmakers, they want to tell a story. This is exactly how it happened to me. And I feel like, I don't feel like that for them, it's not always successful. For me, I don't feel like it's successful. I feel like the way that I channeled what I was feeling into the character of Rob in the movie, like, that's what I want to do is with all of my projects, is, take personal experiences, but put them like there was, I had a creative writing project in college where you had to write a story about something that happened to you, but you had to change one significant detail. And, that's kind of, I think that's kind of how I think stories should be told, is you can do these really like high concept action movie level ideas, but putting in sincere personal experience is what makes it successful, because people are going to respond. You can still tell your story, but if you tell it from a unique angle, that's when I think you get something really special. That's when I think you get something that a lot of people can connect to.
Yeah, exactly. It's about allowing people to connect.
Yeah.
And you just made me think, my ex-wife used to drag her to tons of film festivals back in like 20 years ago. And very often at the end she'd go, "What makes these people think their lives are so interesting?"
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of those very verbatim biography type things, you know?
Yeah.
And like, you know, a film like Lady Bird worked. Her story happened to be something you connect with. But a lot of times you're just like, you
needed to fictionalize it. But she even changed some of the details of that,
too. Yeah, I'm sure she fictionalized it more than yeah.
Yeah.
But verbatim life is not what film is about.
Yeah. Because, somebody can't connect, the next person can't connect with the actual facts of what happened to you, but they can connect with the emotions of what happened to you.
Because it's art and it's metaphorical.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it beautiful. And
yeah, I agree.
So you have your, it sounds like you have a mini library of feature scripts you've written over the years?
I do, yeah. In various stages of finished. I have one that is finished, it's a dark romantic comedy about a professional gambler. And that one I'm very proud of. I've been working on it. That's my baby. I've been working on that for a really long time. But it's interesting because I don't want to take that one out first because it's a romantic comedy. And I think if my first feature were a romantic comedy, because I'm a woman, I think that I would get pigeonholed pretty fast. Mm. That's my fear anyway. Basically, at this point, I've produced and directed so many shorts that if I'm going to produce something again for myself to direct, it's going to be a feature. I'm not going to do any more shorts.
Right. So King of the Ring is the last short.
It's for the last short
for,
that
for
I'm...
For you, that producing and directing.
That I'm producing. So. Because I just directed a short over Thanksgiving that my friend produced.
I was just listening, and I was just thinking, so now you're in the same spot as your friends, the Foley O'Reilly team.
Yes.
Which is, you've made your great shorts now, and a lot of shorts. And now, so now the next step is a feature.
Yeah. So, yes and no. So, one of my goals for 2018 was to get paid to direct something, not just and you know, because up to now I've made my own opportunities and been the producer and just hired myself. But a friend of mine, I think because this King of the Ring did well, a friend of mine wrote a short and she asked me to direct it, and she paid me a little, not very much, but it counts.
That does make you professional.
It does make me professional.
So I had to edit the hell out of that. I think Heather and I talked for nearly 2 hours, and just then you got to hear about half of it, which means, of course, when the day comes that Heather is getting an Oscar or something else and she's made a series of fantastic feature films that are household names, I'm going to be able to go back to the archives, pull out the unedited interview, and let everyone enjoy it. And now it's time for the house cleaning. All right, go to discoverindiefilm.com to see Heather's film, The King in the Ring, as well as a ton of other great short films. There's also links to feature films. Basically, every podcast interview comes with a great film, whether it's a short or a feature. So, you know, that's where the rubber meets the road. If you like indie films, go to discoverindiefilm.com and watch some. And if you're into social media, go to @DIFWINS on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. @DIFWINS is your spot for social media for this podcast and more. And of course, at discoverindiefilm.com, you can find out all about the Sherman Oaks Film Festival. It's every November. Film Invasion LA, that is every June. And if you're really crazy, you can try to dig down and find out information about me. Thanks for listening.